Welcome to the jungle. We have an enormous Wednesday. I've got so much show. Big challenge. The big question is, how am I going to slam all of this show into one 3-hour block? We'll find a way to get it done. What's going on? Welcome to the program. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. You want to see rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. All right, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there is your guest rundown. It was there a minute ago. I'll give it to you right now audibly. What's up? Welcome to the show. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Please follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Hit me up on Instagram at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, coming up next segment. In fact, I love today because I'm going to run down a couple of old buddies, a couple of good friends of the program. Next segment, a senior writer for Defector. Wait for it. Ray Ratto. My man Raymond. Coming back into the jungle. Fired up for that. Ray Ratto coming up in 20 minutes. Another old friend of the program. I honestly hope this guy is as geeked to talk to me as I am to him. Sean Alexander, NFL MVP from back in 2005. Sean used to do both the radio and TV programs back in the day. I've not spoken to him in a long time, so I'm really looking forward to getting caught up with him. Sean Alexander is coming up in hour number two. Top of hour number three, a linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons, Foye Oluokun. He's an Ivy Leaguer. Foye Oluokun joining me in hour number three. You're probably wondering, yeah, Rome, it's Wednesday. What about the beef? Hour number three. Get your beefs together. The beef segment's coming up at 11:20 Pacific time. And because it's Wednesday, there is a show after the show. Jim Rome Podcast, we are up to episode 158. Again, I'm proud of that number. 158, premium, free, long-form conversations. And today we run down an all-time Cleveland Browns great, Joe Thomas. He has not been on the pod before. So today is a big day, and I'm going to slam a What's Your Beef segment in there somewhere. All right, let's get at it. 1-800-636-8686. Rare is the day that I start this program, a nationally syndicated program, my program, with a take on the Houston Texans. If I'm doing that, either something really good happened or something really bad happened. And you probably know what that is. Nothing good. The Texans fired Bill O'Brien back in early October. So at that time, that was the right move. When they did that, that was actually a step in the right direction. I mean, you have to stop losing before you can start winning. You have to stop going backwards before you can move forwards. So firing Bob was the right move at the right time. Unfortunately, just about every single move they've made since then has been a complete and utter disaster. A thorough and comprehensive exercise in puking all over yourself at every single chance. For instance, Cal McNair reportedly told Deshaun Watson that he could be involved in the hiring of the new GM and the new head coach. Not that he would get to make the decision, but that he would be involved in the process. The owner told him that and then completely ignored his input. So Watson reportedly had been advocating for Eric Bieniemy as a head coaching candidate. Not only did the Texans not even interview him, they were the only team with a head coaching vacancy not to interview him. And again, it's not like Bieniemy is some obscure candidate or some guy that only Deshaun Watson was interested in. No, Bieniemy has been the candidate for 2 years now. It was a shock when he didn't get a head coaching job after last season. And he's the guy that every single team wants to talk to this time around, except the Texans. The only team that didn't want to talk to him is the team that has a quarterback who's saying, that's my guy. That's the guy I want. You want my input? My input is this. Hire Eric Bieniemy. So when you see something like that, how can you not see that as the team giving Watson the biggest middle finger possible? The biggest and loudest way possible. Hey, Deshaun, tell us who you like as a head coach so we can make sure that we don't hire him. Hey, Deshaun, who do you want us to hire? We want to know so we can make sure we don't even talk to him. That's pretty much what Houston said, and that's pretty much how they handled it. And it didn't get much better with the GM search either. Something else that Deshaun Watson was supposed to be involved in. Because they went through this song and dance about interviewing new candidates, about going a different direction, about we're not going to be the Patriots South. Then they go out and they hire a guy that they wanted a few years back but could not get at the time. So they didn't go in a different direction. They kept doing what they've been doing. And not only was Deshaun Watson not involved in that process, but apparently he found out about that hiring on Twitter when he was on vacation. Not only did they not involve him, they didn't even tell him. He had to find out at the same time the rest of us did. Man, I've said it before, I'll say it again right now. Deshaun Watson has been an absolute blessing for the Houston Texans. He is one of the best things that has ever happened to that franchise. And pretty much from the very moment he's arrived, they have seemed bound and determined to wreck his career and break his spirit. As an example, the guy's been sacked 155 times in the last three seasons. That's more than 50 times a year. That's more than three times per game. That's some David Carr bleep right there. And sure, you can say that some of that's on him for trying to extend plays and make something happen. But know this, if I were running a team and I were lucky enough to get Deshaun Watson in the draft, I would do everything in my power to make sure that that guy was safe and that guy was healthy. And I would make damn sure that that guy was happy. So I'll tell you what I wouldn't do. I would not trade away my Hall of Fame wide receiver. I would not piss him off with the hiring process. Two things that they did do. And now the Texans are scrambling because yesterday came word, and this is rich, man, this is rich. Yesterday came word that they have requested an interview with Bieniemy. Now, if you're Eric Bieniemy and word gets back that now they want to talk to you, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to handle that? If I'm Bieniemy, I'm going to think long and hard about turning that down. Even the right to talk to them. Like normally the thing is, what's it hurt in talking? In this case, a lot. And if I'm him, I'm thinking about not doing that. And not just out of pride, but you'd have every reason to turn that down out of pride. And not because it seems like they're not even serious about actually hiring you and they're only doing it to placate their star. I mean, that seems to be the case too, right? No, but I would turn it down because I've seen how that organization operates. I've seen that dysfunction firsthand if I'm Eric Bieniemy. I've seen how they came to offer me that interview, and that would tell me everything I need to know about them. It tells you that the last place you want to work, even though they have one of the best quarterbacks of a generation, that is the last place you want to work because you've seen how they handle their business. Well, one more thing. One more thing about how badly the Texans have butchered this. Houston waited until yesterday to request that interview with Bieniemy, and according to the league's anti-tampering rules, they now have to wait until Kansas City is eliminated or wins the Super Bowl. That's how dysfunctional these guys are. To quote a wise man, congratulations, you played yourself.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
Freaking bravo. Well done. Well done. You pissed off your quarterback by not interviewing one of the leading head coaching candidates when you had that chance. And then you went back to get your chance, and then you found out you have to wait a few weeks to actually do the interview. Man, you know how bad this has gotten? You know how bad this has gotten? Andre Johnson weighed in. That's right. The Texans legend tweeted the following, quote, "If I'm Deshaun Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic." Dang. Like, if you know Andre Johnson, even a little, you know that is the straightest of straight fire. This is a guy who never complains about anything. This is a guy who never really says anything about anything, no matter how bad everything is. He suffered through some absolutely brutal teams, some brutal quarterbacks, and never said a damn thing. He just showed up, balled out, and put up crazy numbers. So if that guy is saying that Deshaun Watson should stand his ground, that carries a lot of weight. And when he says, quote, "the Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers," that is the absolute brutal truth. because they had a receiver like Johnson and nothing to show for it. Johnson also is not just speaking in theory. He's speaking in fact and in experience. He is walking proof that the Texans waste players' careers. And he's not alone. They've had J.J. Watt. They don't have a hell of a lot to show for that, do they? They had DeAndre Hopkins. They have nothing to show for that. And now Deshaun Watson. And knowing them, they'll probably have nothing to show for that, too. And then Johnson turned his cannon on the mysterious Jack Easterby. Quote, since he's walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Hey, listen, I don't know old Jack. I have no idea what Jack actually does. But it sure doesn't seem like anything positive has happened since he arrived in Houston. And then finally, Johnson capped off that tweet with pathetic and 3 exclamation points. Again, for that guy to tweet, that's a monster statement. And even one more detail to add to this whole thing. Johnson, this is a hammer. Johnson was an advisor in the hiring process for the new GM and the head coach. So that's not just some team legend who had a few pops and then grabbed his phone and jumped on Twitter. This is coming from somebody who was an advisor in the process to hire a new GM and a head coach, and he's calling the entire situation pathetic. Or in other words, to be more succinct, DeAndre Hopkins jumped in with, quote, when Dre speak, listen, end of quote. Well, I'd say that team should follow that advice, but I know they won't. It's been a long time since I've seen this level of dysfunction from an NFL franchise. I mean, I don't think I've seen this kind of dysfunction from an NFL franchise since, I don't know, the Jets last week, every day, today, tomorrow. That is some New York Jets bleep dysfunction right there. Congrats, Jack. You brought out a fire in Andre that I have not seen since he and my guy Cortland Finnegan gave each other the hands back in the day. Man, that is wild. You know it's bad. If I can devote an entire opening block to it, you know it's bad. Really bad. 1-800-636-8686. If you're a Texans fan and you want to get into it, you can right now. Or if you're a Texans fan and you want to get into it, save your beef for hour number 3. You know it's bad if I bumped Kyrie out of the open, because that's where I would have gone. Kyrie doing Kyrie things. And then I've got thoughts on the NBA. The NBA is tightening things up. New restrictions involving COVID, and the players are not happy. And I understand why they're not happy, but at the same time, if they want to play and they want to get paid and they want there to be a season, they're going to have to comply. I mean, it's one of those lose-lose, suck-suck situations. The restrictions are pretty brutal. But then again, it seems to me that NBA season is already hanging in the balance. They have to. Oh, and look who's come around to things. Look who has come around to things finally. Giants head coach Joe Judge. Joe Judge went on WFAN. And apparently Joe Judge has finally come around to, you know what? Maybe it wasn't Philadelphia's fault that we didn't make the playoffs. Maybe it was our fault. Maybe it's not that, oh, Doug Peterson had to play Nate Sudd. Maybe the reason we're not in is not because of that, but because we lost 10 games. Right, Joe. Good answer, Joe. Way to finally come around to that, Joe. I'll get to that. That's why we're still talking about that, because Joe finally came around to it. Remember Evander Kane? Remember when I talked about Evander Kane? It's been a while, right? It's gotten worse. I've got an update, and it's not good for him. And my guy Aaron Rodgers gets a shot at his dream gig. I'll try and get that in. Chris in St. Pete, first one through. The Texans are a Brody Van Wagenen hire away from completing the Mets transformation. Damn, dude, you butchered the spelling of his name. I had to clean that up for you, Chris. 1-for-3-C-1. Quote, what a train wreck the Texans are. Signed James Harden. Yeah, Harden's handling that pretty well. Harden came out and said, you know what? We can't win here. We just can't win here. We're not competitive. Right, James? You think maybe you might have something to do with that fact? Hey, Rome, I don't have beef. I had beef burritos with queso. A lot of them before last night's game. Signed, James, hard to see my feet. Damasio in Albuquerque.
Is it?
All right, when we come back, I may try and get to some thoughts on James Harden. This guy's saying, you got to get me out of here. I mean, obviously, this is evidence that we're not competitive. We got hammered again. That's fine, James. You're right. You're not competitive. You do know that you're part of the reason why they're not competitive, right? The way you're handling yourself, what you've done, what you've said, the way you're playing. You know you're part of that, right? I'm not putting it all on you, but you know you're part of that. It's not just an all them thing. It's not just what they're doing to you or what's happening to you. When we come back, Ray Ratto makes his triumphant return to the jungle. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So you stay in this game long enough, you make a few enemies, but you make a few friends. And I mentioned at the very top, I was fired up about today because I was going to run down a couple of old pals. Coming up next hour, one of them, the 2005 NFL MVP, Sean Alexander. Coming up right this second, however, is an icon. The co-host of Damon Ratto and Kolsky. A columnist for Defector.com. A panelist from my daily TV show back in the day. And a legend. It is Ray Ratto, and he joins us now. Ray, it has been a while since you and I last spoke. In fact, Ray, it's been way, way, way too long. Ray, how are you doing, and how is life for Raymond Ratto right now?
Well, I've been waiting in the parking lot since the last time I was on, so it's a little bit chilly.
My man.
Nah, it's fine. You know, we have not been touched by the dreaded COVID. Being in the house every day, all day, is a pain in the keister, but you know, like I said, people have it way worse, and I've still got a job, and my wife hasn't killed me in my sleep yet, so it wins all around.
Perfect. Ray Ratto joining us. I'm going to talk to you about that job in a minute. So you're stuck in the house like a lot of people, Ray, but let me ask you this. What's it like being Ray Ratto and covering sports throughout a pandemic?
Oh, it's a gut-wrenching nightmare. I mean, oh, you're just talking, oh, being Ray Ratto is a gut-wrenching nightmare. covering sports,
right.
I got used to it pretty quickly. Everybody, you know, in the business was worried that there wouldn't be anything to write about or talk about when there were no games. And it turns out that the business of sports creates more conversation than the sports themselves. So I never felt like we were running dry. We were running weird, and I didn't know how long the weird would last, but we're still getting weird today. So I think we basically have found a well that continues to bubble up weird. And so we get kissed on the forehead every morning because there's always something goofy to talk about.
And as I've always mentioned, Ray, weird is good in almost every case. Now, Ray, one of the things that I've always loved about you, in addition to your sweaters and the fact that you were the only panelist on our TV show who would ever take a drink of water during the segment itself, was the fact that you see through some of the BS surrounding sports, the stuff that some people get way too wrapped up in. How would you describe then your relationship with sports in general?
I've worked very hard to compartmentalize what I see from what I know. I mean, the games are still fun to watch, you know, athletic achievement, athletic goofiness. I mean, that's still fun, but I've had to put it sort of in a different place than it used to be because there are way more important things going on this year more than any other. And I've found that the fascinating thing is how sports has reacted to that. And largely, it's reacted poorly because I think most people in sports have been worried way too much about the schedule and not nearly enough about the health and safety of the people it employs or gathers as an audience. I mean, the NFL is proud of the fact that it played all 256 games. And I'm not sure that's something you should be proud of because that means you're putting, you know, the events ahead of the people. And I think one of the things, I mean, we saw it in baseball. We surely saw it in college football. We're seeing it to a certain extent in college basketball. There's a point at which the games are less important than they used to be, not because they're trivial, but because they're getting in the way of helping get rid of the virus. We all thought that, you know, the distraction would be helpful. But what we're finding out when you look at the ratings on all sports is that fewer people are going for the distraction. I mean, the national championship game Monday night had the lowest rating ever. The six playoff games over the weekend, the four that could be compared, were down like 25%. I think there's a general mood, at least among sports fans, that they wouldn't believe this before, but I think in some ways they can take it or leave it. And I think sports has been slow to sort of understand that. You know, they're providing a service, but it's not a vital service. It's, we don't need sports. Sports needs us.
We're talking to Ray Ratto. You know, it's really interesting, Ray, when you lay it out like that, because, and I agree, there is certainly something to that, and we make our business talking about sports, covering sports. And in fact, now you're writing for Defector.com. For those who are late to the party, what is Defector, and what is it about that opportunity that appealed to you so much?
It's basically, I mean, this may not explain it very well, but it's the old Deadspin. And what it was a blog site. It was a website with sports and other things. And the people who were working there full time ran afoul of their new bosses, who wanted to get rid of all the other things and just have people write about sports and try to monetize it better, even though it was making money at the time. And so the people who were there just up and quit. They just said, we're not working under those conditions because we're succeeding doing what we're doing. And most of them went, you know, they were unemployed for a while. They did the brave thing of basically going fingers up to the boss. And I was doing some freelancing for them at the time, so I really wasn't part of that. You know, I was just somebody they'd asked to do something here and there. So when they gathered together again to say, let's do this, you know, the same way, only we'll be the bosses, they were gracious enough to ask me if I'd be part of that, and I jumped at it. It was a chance to write again. It was a chance to write the way I want to write, you know, to look at the games and the business the way I want to. And it's been a delight. And I usually don't say that about work.
I was going to say, Ray, I've never heard you describe anything as a delight.
Well, I'm having fun. I expect that in about 6 months it's going to become a nightmare. But, you know, so far they haven't figured out how to do it yet.
Right. That's great. Ray Ratto is joining us. Ray, one of the pieces you have up right now is on Tom Flores, who's a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the third time. First off, why do you think that he has not gotten into the Hall in the past? And does this campaign behind him this year feel different this time around?
I think the fact that he's the coaching finalist is different, and the only coaching finalist. I think it's resonating more that he was the first Hispanic coach. And I think, you know, in some ways, you know, at least the Pro Football Hall of Fame is understanding that there are things other than what you see in Pro Football Reference. I think the reason why he hasn't gotten in before that is because his win-loss record is relatively ordinary for a Hall of Fame candidate. He doesn't have I think it's like 526, which is lower than Don Coryell's, and Don Coryell has missed six times. So I think what they've sort of taken into account is the fact that he did win two Super Bowls and won them while working for Al Davis, which is its own sort of suicide pact. And I think the fact that, you know, he was the first, you know, Hispanic coach is resonating with some voters. I think he'll get in this time because there really is no sort of impediment to that before, because he's only been a finalist, like I said, twice before, and last year was the year that they threw in about 30 guys. And so it was a crowded field, and it's still a crowded field, but he's the guy who got to the finals this time. And the guy who gets to the finals has about a 50-50 shot of getting in, which is better than he's ever had before.
Ray Ratto is a columnist for Defector.com. He is an icon. He is a good friend of the program. Ray, you've also got a great piece up on the passing of Tommy Lasorda and the last of the baseball managers who were truly the center of attention. What was Tommy like to cover back in the day?
He was basically everything that everybody said. He was funny. He was crude. He was a bully. He was funny. He was a good baseball man, and he benefited from being in the right town at the right time. I don't know that Tommy Lasorda could have or would have been near as successful, say, if he was in Cincinnati, where the audience is different and the players were different. But in Los Angeles, you could be a star, and he knew how to be a star. I mean, he had his dark side like a lot of people of that era did, but for the most part, he knew how to be a good cartoon character, you know. And I think, you know, in Los Angeles in the 70s, that was kind of helpful for baseball, because baseball was and is becoming again a very gray game. And so he was sort of the antidote to that. And he didn't mind playing the villain. And that helped too. So he was basically a very good baseball man, but he was a great actor.
And a great character, and he loved being who he was, and that's always my favorite thing about people. I love people who love being who they are. He loved being Tommy Lasorda. Now, Ray, not that long ago, Brian Curtis wrote a profile on you trying to get to the bottom of who you are, and there are some amazing details for this piece. As an example, going back to the day, Nick Peters gave you some advice, quote, never show fear. For those who do not know, who was Nick Peters, and then what did that advice mean to you?
Nick Peters was a longtime beat writer in the Bay Area. He covered the Giants primarily, but he also was sort of the sport. He was the sports editor at the newspaper in Berkeley when it had one. And he was a guy who had seen everything and done everything. And so when I was starting out, starting to cover baseball on site, you know, I went over to him. I said, I've got to sit down with Frank Robinson. What do I need to know? And what he said was, don't show fear, because they'll kill you, and they won't hide the evidence. They'll just destroy you, and they'll move on. So I went in, did the interview, and after about two questions, when he was profoundly uncooperative, I just got up and said, I could get this at home. I don't need this. I'm going to go out. And so I got up to leave, and he said, where are you going? I said, you know, I'm not going to go through grief to get one-word answers. And he said, sit down. And we ended up talking for 45 minutes. And the only reason why that happened was because Nick Peters told me not to back down. You know, you don't have to be rude, but you don't have to subject yourself to somebody else's rudeness. And it was advice that really served me in good stead for a long time. I'm glad you brought the question up, because Nick Peters is very much a Bay Area icon.
Ray Ratto joining us. So, Ray, did that same approach work with Barry Bonds? What was it like to cover Barry?
I never got the same response, but Bonds also didn't, you know, try to bully me. And I also did the one thing that I think was the best thing to do with recalcitrant athletes is only go up to them when you need them and don't hang around their locker hoping they'll pass by. Just operate on your day. If you don't have to talk to them, don't talk to them. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, I had any kind of relationship with him, but it was not a hostile. But whatever relationship I had, it wasn't hostile. It was just, okay, what do you want? And then I'd ask, I'd get my answer, and I'd leave. I mean, you sort of have to read the personality as best you can. And sports writers, by and large, aren't good at that. There are some relative guidelines, you know. If a guy doesn't want to talk and you don't have to talk to them, don't talk to them. You know, it's not like you're going to miss anything and you're going to get your story done anyway. So, you know, don't get your feelings hurt that they don't care about you, because they don't care about anybody.
It seems pretty logical. So, Ray, you go way back in this business and you know how much this business has changed over the years. And not a lot of people have been able to stay around the way you have and remain relevant to maintain a meaningful voice. You've done that. How have you been able to do that?
Largely luck. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I got laid off at NBC at the end of 2018, I sort of thought that was it. But, you know, Matt Nahigian at the radio station, KGMZ, reached out to me. And then Barry Pacheski at The Factor reached out to me, too. So, you know, there are a lot of people who have sort of, you know, run the race, and then when it ended, there was no second act. I got lucky twice, and that's really all this is, because the way media jobs are shrinking and the way that, you know, fewer and fewer independent outlets are out there for people to go after, to get a couple of them, you know, I rolled a seven. That's basically it, because people as good as me and better than me never did get back in, and I always remember that.
He is Ray Ratto. He is an icon. He is the co-host of Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. He was a columnist, or is, for Defector.com. He was a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day, which was an absolute blast. He is a legend. Raymond, it's so good to have your voice. We should have done this so much sooner. I'm glad we came together. We will do it again much sooner than that, and it's so great to have you back, Ray.
So tomorrow at 9:30 now?
Perfect. Perfect.
Great.
You got it. Every day at 9:30, Ray. All right?
Sounds good.
See you tomorrow, 24 hours from now. Ray Ratto. Ray is so awesome. That was a blast. And again, that's on me. That should have happened much sooner than that just did. So my thanks to Ray. If you remember him from our daily TV show back in the day and his legendary sweaters, you can weigh in. So as I mentioned, I got a couple of good friends. Ray is already in the tank or in the bank. Sean Alexander coming up next hour. And once again, I want to say, I hope that Sean is as eager to talk to me as I am him, because I'm fired up for that. We had some great conversations back in the day. Foye Oluokun is a linebacker for the Falcons. He'll join us at the top of hour number three. What's Your Beef? That segment's coming up. I'm coming, Albie. What's Your Beef is coming up in hour number three. I ran really heavy. So it's time for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Wednesday represents a couple of things. You've got the What's Your Beef segment, and you've got the ATP segment, Ask the Pros, which is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Ask me a question. I will answer one later on. And in the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Great to get caught up with Ray Ratto. He is a legendary writer. Great, great columnist. Great. He had a couple of power moves back in the day when he was on our daily TV show that was so much fun. We always got a kick out of Ray. Always got a kick out of Ray. Whenever it was a Ratto week, we knew it was going to be a good week. Because as good as Ray was on the air, and he was great, he was always tremendous off the air, because Ray's got a million stories and takes and anecdotes in the best way possible. On air, he did two of my favorite things ever. Number one, he rocks sweaters. Legendary sweaters. When nobody was wearing sweaters, Ray Ratto would show up and wear a sweater. Number two, and I referenced this in passing in the interview today, Ray was the rare guy that would take sips of his water during the segment live. You know, we'd always have that show mug in front of a guest, and either they would drink inevitably coffee or water, depending on who they were. But generally, you would do it before the segment started up. Maybe on a bump back, he'd sneak in a drink of water. Ray, in the midst of an answer, would take a slug of his water. It was a power move, and only a move that Ray Ratto could pull off. And not for effect, maybe a little bit for effect, but he did it, and he owned it, and it was dominant. So Ray is one of my favorite
really
guys.
Sort of extrapolated it that way, but
some other nuanced, subtle things. I don't know if you heard it, but during the interview when he said, quote, being Ray Ratto is a gut-wrenching nightmare, was a great line. Very much in character, an amazing line, and very much on brand. I said, what's it like being Ray Ratto covering sports during a pandemic? And his response was, being Ray Ratto is a gut-wrenching nightmare. Oh, what's it like to cover sports during the pandemic? So he was tremendous. At T. Kanawa tweets, Ray Ratto back in the jungle. Nice. Rome, it was so great to hear from Ray. Always one of my favorite interviews. Freaking jungle legend right there, Mike and GB. He is that, but he really is an icon. I mean, all kidding aside, he is an icon to stay in the game as long as Ray has. And that's why I asked him the question at the very end of the interview. You know, how, not what's it mean to you, but rather how have you managed to stay in this game as long as you have and remain relevant and pertinent and competitive? And he said, he deflected that, of course, by saying luck, lots of luck. I mean, good fortune plays a part of that, but mostly hard work, point of view, and being different. And being different in a good way. Not being different just to be different. Not being different by saying a bunch of crap that you don't believe. Staying true to yourself and being different. Rome, thanks for putting on a Bay Area legend, even though he looks like Andy Reid's mini-me. War Tom freaking Tolbert. Tom freaking Tolbert also is a mutual friend of Ray and I's.
Dr. Boudreaux.
That guy, Tommy T. Tommy T might be the best guy I know in the business. I love Tom Tolbert. All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-636-8686. Looky here. Let's go to the up and coming shiny metropolis that is Buffalo. Rick, what's going on, brother?
Forget the models in the sushi gym. Saturday's win over the Colts was so big, I went straight for the strippers and blow. It was the kind of win that can propel a team in a city to its first ever Super Bowl title. And now that the weight of a 25-year playoff winless streak is gone, Josh Allen and the boys are ready to burn this mother down. And I'm especially excited for the young Bills Mafia who are experiencing the madness for the very first time. There was nothing better than putting my four-year-old son and his little buddy through a couple tables, then teaching them how to funnel beers afterwards. And we'll be at the stadium again Saturday night. And if we should happen upon any Ravens fans, the young Bucks will get their first lesson in kicking some ass. And along those same lines, Jim, I heard that clown Matt Van was in here running his mouth about wanting to fight me. Not sure if that idiot knows, but I got two hobbies in life: calling this show and punching people in the face. So challenge accepted. And forget about Fight Island, Jim. Let's just make it happen in your studio. And after I take care of Matt, I'll put the whole Hawk versus Ritt thing to bed when I beat the holy hell out of both of them. But don't worry, I promise to leave little Elvie alone because I don't pick on pathetic kids. War John Harbaugh being almost as big of a diaper bitch as Mike and Indy. War Donald Trump being almost as big of a bunker bitch as Mike and Indy. War Saturday night being all right for fighting. Bills 34, Ravens 10. To quote that fat-ass Ritt, mark it down. Thanks for the vine, Jim. Who loves you, baby?
Absolutely amazing. Rackham Rick in Buffalo. To quote that fat-ass Ritt, mark it down. Ritt, he didn't say badass. He said fat-ass. And he said he'd whip your ass. And Hawk. But he would not pick on Alvy because I don't pick on pathetic kids. Dude. I've got two hobbies, Jim. Calling the show and punching people in the face. Never mind the models. I skipped right ahead to the strippers and blow. I love a teacher. A guy who teaches, skipping ahead to the strippers and blow and throwing four-year-olds through flaming tables and teaching them how to drink. It is crazy in Buffalo. As crazy as it is in Buffalo, can you imagine if there was no pandemic? I mean, this is how crazy it is when 7,200 people get into the stadium. And Steve Tasker and I talked about this. I'm going to update the Jim Rome podcast today with Joe Thomas, but Steve Tasker is still alive. In fact, they're all still alive. You can go back and listen to any of them. But Steve Tasker and I were talking about what it's like in Western New York right now, and this was prior to their win over the Colts, but how crazy things are, how fired up people are, how most of the region sounds like Rick. Not as good as Rick. Rick's one of one. But that's the general feeling, and how much more crazy, man, how insane would it be had there not been a pandemic in effect? Like, if the Bills Mafia could do what the Bills Mafia always does, what it would really be like. But even short of that, it's like that. I think that Rick set the tone better than I ever could, better than anybody ever could. Saturday night. Time to fight. Even got some Elton John in there. All right, so I can't wait for that. That is a great matchup. In fact, I'm looking at all these matchups, all tough calls, especially if you want to do a little business. And I'm thinking about the big head, James Kelly. Looking at the spreads on all these games, these are all tough picks. Every single one of them. I mean, straight up, they're all amazing games. Against the spread, they're essentially impossible. Who you got? Who do you like? I've got an open segment coming up at the top, and then I've got Sean Alexander. Stay tuned. Hour number two, straight ahead.